12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Neil Armstrong reporting the roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on a proper heading.
Bill McIntosh Show now on with NetTalk America, thanks to J.R. LaFlower. Shout out to him. We're going to be on with two very interesting guests, Stephen Williford of the Second Amendment Foundation and Michael Letts of InvestUSA, to discuss high-capacity magazines and the unfolding dystopian nightmare unfolding before our eyes, if you care to look at our southern border. Bill McIntosh Show, lots of good guests and lots of good music. Stay tuned.
77 Sunset Strip. 77 Sunset Strip. 77 Sunset Strip. La 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 la.
Do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. You see, SmartFares has special deals with the airline. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find the best price for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight, guaranteed. Also save up to 50% off the business and first class tickets as well. Call 802-424-3113. That's 802-424-3113. That's 802-424-3113. SmartFares, sponsors of the Freedom First Network.
On November 5th, 2017, in Sutherland Springs, Texas, Stephen Williford was ready. Someone had entered a church with tactical gear and body armor, with 700 rounds of ammunition and a rifle, methodically opening fire on over 40 worshipers. Stephen Williford was ready.
I grabbed a handful of ammunition, shoved them in a magazine, and ran out the door.
And how many bullets did you have in the magazine?
Well, it turned out I had 8 rounds.
Wow.
And I ended up shooting 6 of those 8 and hitting him 6 times out of those 6 shots that I took. And when he was able to get in his vehicle and run away, I was able to flag a man down that was sitting at the stop sign, had witnessed it. He allowed me into his vehicle. His name was Johnny Langendorf. I'd never met Johnny before. And we pursued the shooter for 11.6 miles, is what the police said. And at the end of it, he took his own life. He had been shot multiple times, and he took his own life.
Bad boys, what you want? What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? When you were 8 and you had bad treats.
Bill McIntosh Show now on with Stephen Williford of the Second Amendment Foundation and Michael Letts of InvestUSA. It's a great encounter with a Texan and a man from the Palmetto State. Unless you not know state nicknames, that's South Carolina, right, Michael?
That is correct. I'm surprised you knew that, Bill.
Of course. I mean, Texas is the Lone Star State, right, Stephen? Or is there another name for Texas?
Lone Star State. Absolutely.
State of Independence is another one. The State of Independence is another one.
Oh, for South Carolina?
For Texas.
For Texas. Okay, cool. Great, great. I was thinking it's Fort Sumter, but that's politically incorrect. We can't talk about that. Anyway, listen, I wanted to get you guys on because Stephen, being from the Second Amendment Foundation, somebody who gained national notoriety because he was just A Good Guy with a Gun, the Barefoot Defender, called that because he, you know, found out that there were shots being fired. His daughter says, "There's Dad, there's shots being fired at the church nearby." And he grabs his AR-15 and runs out, takes 8 rounds of ammunition to his AR-15 and intervenes in a deadly mass church shooting that took place in Sutherland Springs, Texas at the First Baptist Church, November 5th, 2017. Is an incredible story, but it's kind of thrust Stephen, willingly or not, into the spotlight to talk about self-defense and the country and important values that have to do with our Constitution and our nation. And Michael Less is with Invest USA. That's an organization that he started, and it's a national grassroots nonprofit organization that is helping hundreds of communities provide thousands of bulletproof vests for their police forces through educational public relations, sponsorship, and fundraising programs. As I said, Stephen's with the Second Amendment Foundation, Stephen Wilford, and he's also got a website, which is thebarefootdefender.com. The Second Amendment Foundation is www.saf.org. And so anyway, welcome to the program, gentlemen. It's great to have you both on at once. I knew this would be a good conversation.
Hopefully, I'm honored to be able to do it. Bill, I'm glad you're able to put us together. There's a lot to talk about.
One of the first things, speaking of which, of topics, I want to bring up this topic of the court in California, the Federal Appeals Court has upheld California's ban on original capacity magazines for rifles and pistols. It's expected that this case will be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so I wanted to ask, what's your take on this? Stephen, give us your reaction to this. Why is it important for so-called, quote, high-capacity magazines to be protected by the Second Amendment?
Well, absolutely, high-capacity magazines, or standard capacity, as they should really be called, because that's what was designed for the AR-15. So it's standard capacity magazines, and standard capacity magazines for, say, a Glock or whatever. There should be no deciding what number is a high capacity. 2 could be a high capacity if they put that random number in there. So absolutely, the Second Amendment Foundation is all over this, and we're appealing it. It was seen by a lower court, I guess, that was unconstitutional, and it got appealed to a higher court, and it's just making its way up the ladder, and we know that it will not stop until it reaches the Supreme Court.
Right, and you know, it's funny, because this is one time when I suppose liberals will want to invoke not original intent, but the historical context, because at that time, you know, you had muskets and, you know, two bullets and two shots at one pass would be pretty good in those days, because the fact that everybody used muskets and, you know, flintlocks. So, but that's ridiculous. I mean, no state militia, which is all the premise of the Second Amendment, you know, it can be expected to use antiquated firearms. So that's just all bogus. So what's your reaction to this whole topic, Michael? What's your view on this whole thing?
Well, I think it's part of the process that we've seen going on for the last 20 years. They are desperate to destroy our last rights and freedoms. And there's only one thing that keeps that from happening, and that's the fact that, unlike other countries in the world, we're an armed country. We're armed citizens. Kind of hard to take somebody's liberties and freedoms when he's armed and able to defend himself. So they have to find every viable method to remove our firearms, any ability to do that, to make firearms look bad in a bad light, to call them assault rifles, to say they're unnecessary, to say the only thing that our forefathers intended was for you to hunt rabbits with a musket. Anything they can come up with that they think sounds reasonable. I think we all realize that the liberal mindset doesn't even make common sense anymore. But anything they say, they do. And then, unfortunately, there are enough liberal judges where they're able to get these cases heard before them. And as Steve said, it's going to ultimately end up with the Supreme Court. But I do believe that the Supreme Court, with the justices that we have, understand the Second Amendment is vital to our Constitution. And it's very difficult to put prohibitions on that Second Amendment because then it becomes subjective. I think two shells or two cartridges are enough. You think three. It's best just to allow what the Second Amendment was intended to do, and that's to give you the right to be armed. But what it says in our Constitution, should the day arise where a government becomes tyrannical and in need of being corrected, we have the ability to do so.
And I'm going to tell you that day is coming nearer and nearer all the time.
Stephen, I believe that day is already here.
Oh, I do too, but I was just giving it the benefit of doubt for right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, for today, December the 15th, we can agree to give it for the benefit of the day, but that's about as far as we can go.
But here we're being invaded also in our southern border, and people don't realize how bad this invasion really is.
Unless you've been there, you don't. And, of course, I've been there. I think you've been there too, Stephen.
I have been to the border, and it's real discouraging.
It's what's really discouraging is that we ask our law enforcement officers, our border patrol, and even some of our guard units to do what they think they're supposed to do, which is uphold the law. And yet they can't get the support of the administration to do that. They don't have the proper equipment. They can't defend themselves. Their hands are tied with bureaucracy. And, you know, I tell people this all the time. You get somebody excited about a job and you give him the job to do, and then you make it so that he can't perform it. That's the quickest way to knock the wind out of somebody, destroy their morale, and cause them to walk away. Another tactic to try to do to destroy our country.
Not only are they not doing their job, being allowed to do their job, but they're actually, like in Roma, Texas, they're facilitating moving illegals across the border, and they're facilitating it working directly with the drug cartels. And I videoed that, and I have proof that they are helping move illegal aliens across, and that's our National Guard. And then they're accepted, the illegals are accepted by our Border Patrol, and then checked in, put on buses, and sent all over the U.S.
The question I want to ask about this is that, and this is going on with the direction of higher ups. I just can't believe that the Texas National Guard gets together with calls, you know, their friendly drug cartel neighbors. Hey, gentlemen. Hey, you know, we were thinking about this. We were having some beers, and we just thought that it'd be a great idea to, you know, why don't you bring over some immigrants? You know, what do you say?
You're right, Bill. They're making the comment that, you know, we
kind of Walmart is hiring, and they can't find anybody.
We feel bad for you. You feel like you're overwhelmed. We'd be willing to help you do your job, move some people across.
Yeah, we understand you're under a lot of stress. Remember Tony Soprano?
Yeah.
went to a psychiatrist because he was suffering a lot of post-traumatic stress from his life of crime. So, now, honestly, how is this happening? How the hell can this happen? Well, who tells?
I think, Bill, you made the point. It's coming from the top down. It's not coming from the bottom up. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people who, in my opinion, even if it comes from the top down, you should be taking a position. I took an oath. I swore ability to defend the Constitution, and I won't participate. But unfortunately, their life, when I say their life is in the balance, their job, their ability to feed for their family. And so they're frustrated and confused, but they're complacent. And that is what we have to break. We can no longer be complacent in this country. We have to confront the evil that is being done, and we have to confront it forcefully. We have to do what it takes, as our forefathers did in 1776, to make sure that evil is defeated.
So, Stephen, I'll ask you a question, because you've been down there. Where did you go, Michael, in Texas?
Where did I go? I was right on the border. I was in the town of Del Rio, but all six counties, basically from Culberson and Hedspeth all the way down to Villa Verde. So we basically covered almost from El Paso down to the middle of the state, which is where Del Rio is at.
Right. Well, Stephen, go ahead, Stephen. I want to ask you.
I was down farther south, McAllen area, and I guess Roma is about 45 minutes from McAllen, and I went to McAllen, and I see where this huge, beautiful wall is that Trump talks about, with big doors in the wall, gates in the walls, and they open up the big gates and let them flood through.
I've actually been there as well, Stephen. We had done that one before. We were trying to do the rest of Texas border, but we can only do, the equipment only works if you use it. And I know that there was an enthusiasm during the previous administration to shut down the cartel and to shut down illegal immigrants. And that has been reversed 180 degrees. And now they're utilizing the equipment that we gave to defend to help facilitate. And that is that's very disheartening.
I've talked to Colonel Allen West, and I've also talked to Don Huffines, both running for governor in the state of Texas. And they say that first thing that needs to really happen is the drug cartels need to be made a terrorist organization.
Correct.
And freeze their assets and start doing work to shut them down totally. The drug cartels are making $8,000 per person moving across the border, or getting an agreement from each one of those people that they move across to do their crime on this side of the border, to run drugs or prostitution or run children and sex crimes.
It's a huge business, Stephen. You know, I mean, human trafficking is up 1,379 to be exact, percent, almost 1,400% in the last 6 months. 8 months ever since Biden administration.
That's 14 times higher. Let me jump in and say something. You know, Stephen, you have some shocking basis for saying that the drug cartels should be designated as terrorist organizations. Tell us why you have that position, what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've been told about what's going on the border, and why it's an apt designation for the drug cartels.
Well, I've been down there and I filmed and I've seen it for myself, and I wouldn't have believed it myself, except I went down there and filmed it. And I've got that film on YouTube. If you go to Barefoot Defender on YouTube, you can go back and look. I did a series of three, and we also talked with Christy Hutchison, which is a authority on human trafficking, and she took us to where a rape tree was, and we saw what is a rape tree. People ask, what is a rape tree? That's where they take these children, they tie them to a tree, and they rape them,
right?
Gang rape children, and if they yell out and scream out, they bash their head in, kill them with a rock to show the rest of the children what happens if you scream. And they take all their
terrorizing them.
What's that?
They're terrorizing children.
Yeah.
And they take
all their children. They're a terrorist organization and should be designated as one.
That's part of the crime syndicate.
They strip them of their clothes and their dignity and who they are. They take away their humanity at that tree. And afterwards, they dress them in clothes that they buy at a Dollar Tree store. And say, even the clothes on your back are ours now. You belong to us. And they sell them into sex trafficking. And that's their life. They say one third of all the children that come across the border, one third. And in Roma, Texas alone, they're moving people across at 800 a night. One spot, 800 a night. And one third of those children disappear completely, and they're going into the sex trade.
You know, there's a big network that helps distribute those victims worldwide, and unfortunately a lot of it has gone through the diocese and the and charities that they think are helping kids, when actually what they're doing is facilitating them being sold and trafficked. And that's a real crying shame.
Wow. Yeah, about that, I want to take that up in a subsequent interview. I want to ask, though, Stephen, there's some other things that happened that you saw, and maybe Michael, you saw this too, you heard about it. Was that, you know, this whole issue of how this human trafficking is organized by way of armbands.
Yeah.
Stephen, you saw something, you heard something unbelievable. I want you to tell it again about how that goes down.
So they bring them into Mexico close to the border, and the Mexican government puts them in big warehouses, and they say they have nothing to drink or nothing to eat while they're in these warehouses, and they're all crammed in there real tight. And at night is when they move them across the border. And when they make arrangements to pay the drug cartel, whether it's cash or whether they agree to do their bidding on this side of the border, the Mexican cartels put an armband on these people. And everyone that crosses the border has an armband on them or they don't cross. A week and a half before I went down there, they said that a man tried to cross the border without an armband on. And the drug cartel caught him, and they drug him to the banks of the Mexican side of the border, where they disemboweled him alive. They opened him up and pulled his intestines out with him screaming. He was within eyeshot of our side of the border, and they could hear him screaming as they pulled his intestines out alive. And then they cut his head off, and they left him on the bank of the river as a warning to anyone trying to cross the border without paying them. And
yeah, this is unbelievable. This whole thing is based on terror, fear, coercion, and you know, in agreement that harkens back to indentured servitude. And lest anybody not remember what that term is, that has to do with at the beginning of our country, even before, of course, people would go from Europe and England, I guess, particularly to the United States. Passage at that time was extremely expensive. They would be under a contract to work for so many years, 8, 10 years, I don't know how many years, to pay off their indentured servitude to cover the costs of passage from Europe to the New World. And this is sort of the new version, 21st century, of indentured servitude with a terrorist twist on it. And what's incredibly disturbing, Stephen, is that, Michael, is that apparently then the cartels are saying, okay, you have an $8,000 debt with us. Now you've got to pay it off by being a human trafficker, you know, working in sex trafficking, or working in selling drugs on a street corner. Is that accurate, Stephen?
That is absolutely accurate. And if you're one of the ones that didn't pay the $8,000 up front, they say a child between the ages of 3 years old and 30 years old is worth $20 million to the drug cartel. So they will work that child in sex trade for 30 years, basically, until they're 30 years old. They'll work them in a sex trade. And when they turn 30, then they, from what I understand, sell them to street gangs to be prostitutes because they're no longer the big money makers anymore. So they sell them to street gangs to be a prostitute. So their whole life is that. They don't just get off with the first $8,000 that they make. They bring.
They keep it for life.
Yeah, they do. They bring. You know,
I've been on a lot of shows across the country, and every time I'm on a show, Bill and Steve, I always get the question: if it is as bad as you say it is, and drugs and human trafficking, why can we not stop it? And I always respond: there is nothing that this country cannot do if it puts its mind to it. We demonstrated that in World War II. We've demonstrated that in conflicts throughout our history. The question is, the will is not there. And the reason why the will is not there is because it is an extremely lucrative cash business. And there are very powerful people who benefit from that. I'm talking from the head all the way down, congressional, policymakers, et cetera. And they have figured out how to do it so that it is not obvious. you get the cartels to contribute to your campaigns, and that's how you win election. And you pay it back by turning the other cheek or by ignoring
certain. Looking the other way.
Looking the other way, exactly. So always follow the money. And I tell people what you have to understand is this is not a small business that maybe pays its light bill and that's it. This business is trillions of dollars worldwide. And when you deal with that kind of assets, we have the ability, give me the tools and I can shut it down in 7 days. But without the tools and the will, which is controlled by the cash flow, it becomes a sham. It becomes, okay, I'm shutting it down. I say that physically so that you feel good about it, but behind the scenes, I'm actually opening up the floodgates. That's where we're at today in a society.
After my video came out showing the National Guard facilitating this, and I'm not saying that my video did this, but our Greg Abbott was under pressure to do something. So he came on Texas television and he said, I have now decided because of everything that's going on that I'm going to shut down 6 port of entries into the United States, shutting down the border. And he came out and he said that and people said, see, there you go. Greg Abbott shutting the border down. I said, no, did you hear what he said? He said he shut down 6 port of entries. That 6 port of entries is legal means of coming into the United States. He did nothing about everybody crossing illegally. It is a game of words. He has to look like he's doing something and tough. And yet what he does is he shuts down legal means of coming into the United States. And nobody wants that. That's not what we're after. We're not after shutting down, keeping legal immigration into the United States.
That's correct.
And as a matter of fact, if you shut down the legal means, that tells everybody that's doing it the right way, you can't do it the right way. So you might as well pay the drug cartel and come over illegally. I had a friend that said that his housekeeper was wanting her sister to come over here and telling her, and her sister's been trying for 2 years to get here. And he said he didn't understand it. I said, well, tell the sister if she's willing to pay $8,000 to the drug cartel, she'll be having breakfast with her the next morning.
Right. You know?
I mean, that's just the way it is.
See, and that's the thing, Stephen. There is a system. It is well-organized. It is a, for lack of a better word, a Fortune 500 business operation. And until we treat it as such and understand that we have the will to shut it down, nothing's going to change. They'll just do a better job of shuffling the deck
so that
you confuse all the time.
I just can't believe that there's enough sick men out there that take advantage of children like Epstein's Island and things. You know, I'm a grandfather, and there's nothing I wouldn't do for my grandbabies.
You know, Stephen, I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I would have to give the flip side of that. If there weren't that many people, it wouldn't be a $1 trillion business.
I know. That's what I'm getting at. I can't believe that there's that many sick people out there that are willing to take advantage of children. And just remember, Jesus in the Bible said that anyone that do anything to one of these, it's better for them to have a millstone tied around their neck and thrown into the river.
I agree. And I think one of the things that we're lacking in this even in this conversation today, we know what the problem is. And as I say on national formats, we can shut it down within 7 days if we want. But the will to do that is not there because of the lucrativeness of the business. And so I really think that we as an American people and those in journalism, especially, not that they would be willing to do this, need to expose where the money goes. We need to follow the money trail and expose those who are benefiting by it. Because quite frankly, I think there are enough American citizens that if they knew who was doing this, instead of being able to cover it up, I think there'd be such an outrage, those people would not be able to live anywhere close to the in this country.
And yet there's a trial going on right now. What's her name from?
Maxwell.
And
you're right. You see, the media is not doing a thing with it. I mean, you know, it's closed doors. There's very little coming out. They want the public to know nothing. This is not on the news cycle. And that's where we become in the dilemma. Imagine if you took that story and you really investigated it and began to say, here are the following people that have put money into this. Here's the following people that are taking money out. Here's how many. Boy, that would be a different story, wouldn't it?
Put it out there like they did with the Kyle Rittenhouse.
Correct.
And then everybody is exposed. Everybody that has part of it is exposed. And the whole nation knows it. I think I could see torches and pitchforks coming to people's doors.
I would agree. And my position is, look, the truth, Scripture says this all along, the truth sets you free. And so, I mean, you're free in this country to take whatever actions you want to take, but you shouldn't have the ability to hide them and then prey on people when nobody knows what's going on. If you think you're a child predator, then be proud of it. Stand out there and tell the public you're doing it and see what happens. Defend your decisions, defend your lifestyle. And if you can't, you better change it.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, this is happening in a widespread basis, and I think it's happening not just with the drug cartels, but also the Chinese. I mean, they're paying for, you know, governorships and mayors, and their tentacles reach everywhere. And I think I wonder if they're not connected. You know,
that would be a good question. Well, that would be something that certainly should be looked at, because when you're talking about trillions of dollars in industry, I'm talking about the human trafficking, the drug cartel. My question to America is, what do you do with it, trillion, with all that money? Where does it go? I mean, you got to spend it on something. You can't not bury it in your backyard. I promise you that.
I would tell you, I spoke with Sheriff Lauterbach from Jackson County, Texas. Sheriff Lauterbach was one of Donald Trump's presidential advisors for everything border.
Right.
And Sheriff Lauterbach said that the drug cartels have a $500 billion a year budget to spend on our media and our politicians on this side of the border. They're trying to change they're trying to take away our Second Amendment. And that's a good time to talk about SAF.org. They're trying to change our Second Amendment because it's the biggest threat to their takeover on this side of the border. They've already taken Mexico's side. And
right.
Make no mistake, they own the Mexican government.
They do.
And they own part of the Texas counties, some of the counties there in Texas where they offer them money or they'll kill their whole family. And these guys know that they have the ability to do it. And so they're spending their money on that. And, you know, Lauterbach said something that was terrifying to me. He said, if you could do the liberal dream of taking everybody's gun on this side of the border, he said, let's play that game for a minute. You could take that and everybody would just turn it in their guns. It's a lie. It wouldn't happen. But if you could, even the good guys, the bad guys, everybody in the whole United States would just turn around and turn in their guns. And he said, when we make a bust down on the border, this is full automatic guns, full automatic M16. It's not AR-15s. And
right.
they're getting rocket-propelled grenade launchers and things like that when they make bust. So they're getting it through the black market. He said, let's just play one even better. Let's say that we could shut down the black market. He said, I told you before that they have a $500 billion budget. They could take $1 billion and build their own firearms manufacturing plant on their side of the border. And any firearms manufacturer would love $1 billion to be able to spend on a manufacturing plant. they could hire and employ all the villages around them, because the villages around the drug cartels love the drug cartels. Make no mistake. They're making commerce for them. They're
right. Having
jobs, and they're protecting them and everything else. And then all the bad guys would have guns, and none of the good guys would have guns at all.
And that is correct. That's a very accurate assessment. You know, I would tell people, I lived in Mexico for 10 years, Stephen. So I grew up there, and I'm very familiar with this government, very familiar with its structure. What I would tell people in my firsthand dealings with drug cartel and the guerrillas, they do have guerrillas in the mountains. And I'm not talking about the animal kind. I'm talking about warfare guerrillas. I would tell people this. They always paint a rosy picture of a lifestyle if you cooperate. They will provide funding, they will provide jobs, they will provide assistance, etc. But bear in mind, anything they want, if you ever cross it, you are ostracized. What I mean ostracized, I mean you're executed, you're killed. So here's what I would tell people who look at that lifestyle. It may be pleasurable and great one day, but if they decide that your daughter is attractive to them and they want your daughter, you don't have any say-so in the matter. If they decide that you want, they want you to do something, or they want you to do the following issue, it's not really a matter for a vote or for debate. That's what you actually live up under. And so you live in fear 24/7. And that is not the American way. That's not the American dream. Never has been. And it's time that we as this country understand this is a national security threat to our future. And we need to deal with it and deal with it very forcefully and very quickly. And I think one of the things that we've talked about in this segment today is not just publicizing what happens. We have got to publicize the funding source, who's benefiting by it, so that people can understand where we need to go. You got to cut off the head of the snake.
I think there's a triad here. Let me tell you what I mean. There's a triad of, you know, different degrees of, let's say, moral reprehensiveness. You know, you have, for example, you have big business and many chambers of commerce and Republicans who love the idea of, you know, the American dream, that, you know, immigrants come to our country. So what if they're, quote, undocumented, end quotes? They want to have a better lifestyle, and they work hard, and they bring competition into the picture. What that basically means is that, you know, they come into the worker job for $7 an hour, and which is just bare subsistence level wages, that Americans just know that this is not enough money to live on or to be able to function on. And so, but they'll take those jobs, do those jobs. So the Republicans are happy, or big business is happy. The chambers of commerce are happy. They run the hotels, you know, cleaning, you know, being maids and porters or whatever, and doing it dirt cheap. So the business sector is happy. The Democrat Party says, these are lovely people. They want to be part of our democracy, of our country, of our great nation, and to contribute to it. And they vote. And so they see voters. One side sees workers on the cheap. Another sees voters on the cheap. And then you have, of course, the criminal element, right? Those who are benefiting from the sex trafficking, from the drug trafficking. And they all look at each other and they grin because, hey, it brings jobs. Yay. You know, it brings money into the economies, right? And I remember this because, I mean, I lived in Colombia. I didn't live in Mexico. I lived in Colombia for a long time. And before I went to Colombia, I had a Colombian girlfriend. She was so cute, so sweet. And she used to say, you know, we don't use drugs, but you Americans do. And it helps our economy. And then I went to live in Colombia, and I saw, when you see people on the street smoking crack, you know, or bazooka, they call it. And it's utterly destructive. And they ended up becoming a nation with huge numbers of drug users. And it destroyed businesses, because you can have a hardware store that's been in business for 50 years. And all of a sudden, you know, a kid nearby, his father's a drug trafficker, and he says, hey, I'd like to open up a hardware store. And they're running it, you know, just barely over the, with enough profit just to barely, to kind of like justify its existence, to launder money. And you're killing the business that's been there for 50 years. That's a legit business that has to run on operate on a higher margin of profit, because there's no way you can have a solvent business otherwise. And so they're killing legitimate businesses left and right. And that's the reality of it. And this is now coming to the United States, and it's been in the United States for decades now. Because I'm sure, Stephen, you probably see this. You probably see businesses that are being going out of business because of the fact that somebody set up operations and they have a ridiculously low price, and it's all about laundering money.
Yeah,
everybody gets hurt, and then the kids. One final little thing to my homily, and that is that, and then those American kids displaced from jobs. You know, jobs that now are in China because the factories went to China, and now they have to hope to get, maybe they can get a job at Walmart or something like that. You know, they're in a situation of desperation, and they're using the drugs and the fentanyl that's coming in over the border that's killing like 100,000 people a year now. Anyway.
Well, it's kind of back to the same thing this country was started on. You know, I mean, the British had a good thing going when we first came over here. The colonies and the greed began to take over, additional taxation. And it wasn't just the taxation. I mean, it wasn't just the Boston Tea Party that caused the revolution. It was our forefathers realizing that we were losing our rights and control, and we were nothing but an extended servanthood of the British Empire. And we're having the same thing happen to us again today. You know, we are no longer as free as we were years ago in this country. We've lost a lot of our freedoms. We've allowed corporate America to become greedy, and we've allowed it to expand into industries such as drug trafficking, human trafficking, et cetera, and control that through fear and intimidation. And we've been complacent. We've just tried to live our lives, not bothering anybody else, and just trying to do the best we can what we have. But society doesn't work that way. And there always comes a time when an awakening, when people realize that even if it's a little more comfortable today not to confront, it won't be tomorrow because I won't have anything to confront tomorrow. And so I think we're just at about that point in this country, and I think it's time that we give the American people the rest of the ammunition they need to realize who the target is, and that it's time that we take action.
The pot's boiling and the frog hasn't jumped yet. It's time for the frog to jump.
I agree. One of the things, Stephen, as I just mentioned, though, I think some people don't know where to jump to. I think we can do a little better job of showing where it is we're headed, and who the problem is and how we're going to deal with it.
That's definitely the problem. And I guess part of where it starts is the fact that we have allowed socialism to work its way into our higher education, into our colleges and stuff. Socialist professors that have taught our children that socialism is okay and it's the way of the future and stuff, and they have taught that, and we have spent our hard-earned American dollars to send our children to higher education to be brainwashed into this. And that's the whole millennials and how they view, because they have been through colleges and stuff, and they go to these colleges and they get a degree that they can't use in philosophy, or something that they can't use in life. And these professors have told them that socialism is the best way out of all of this, you know. And we as parents, good parents, want our children to be educated. But we educate them, and then when we get them back from these higher education institutes, and they're socialist or leftist, and then we wonder what happened. We have allowed this, and it is totally our fault. It's the fault of the church for not standing against Roe versus Wade. Sure. I think this is one of the most horrible things that has ever happened to this country, because when we start aborting God's blessings to our country and devaluing life, the very things that God values, we start losing ourselves. And now we're at the point where assisted suicide in some states is okay. So we devalued life at its very beginning, and now we're devaluing it even more at its end, you know. And where does it stop? And then we expect someone that is a potential mass shooter to value life and think that life is good, you know. And these guys, they don't even value themselves, much less you or anyone else. So why wouldn't we have an uptick in mass shootings and things and, you know, marching in the street and burning and stuff? Because we have not taught God's values in our schools, and we have allowed socialism to be taught. And that's really where, you know, if we win one battle, but we don't start understanding that when we send our kids to a college and they're teaching socialism, then we'll lose it again.
Sure. I'm going to say that it's basically, I think, a time for rebellion against the educational system. But first and foremost, it begins with us. We've forgotten this. You know, the whole idea of education has to do with the word, you know, of from Latin to lead someone out of, and it's to lead someone towards knowledge and out of ignorance. And, you know, then the funny thing is the word nation is in Spanish is nación, and it's, I think it, I have to believe it's related to the word for nacimiento, which is birth, right? And sure. When you start to shut off births, when you kill 50 million plus children through abortion, what are you doing? You're creating this tremendous vacuum that just apart from the moral considerations, the demographic impact is tremendous and the economic impact is tremendous, because all of a sudden you don't have 50 million workers and consumers coming into the economy, into the country. So what happens? You create this tremendous vacuum that brings people in. And these are people that don't have our values. These are people that don't have, they don't agree with us. Now, that some might say, oh, well, that's problematic. You can't be a bigot. Well, wait a second. I live in Latin America. I've lived here for a long, long time. My kids are all, you know, de facto Hispanics because their mother was Hispanic. So my point on all this is that these are countries where left-wing political ideology dominates. It's the default setting on their brains. So if they come in large numbers in the United States, it's gonna enter that type of mentality, that the government is you know, my source for economic help and aid and consolation, and the entity that's going to solve my problems. That mentality is being imported into the United States. And what do we have? We have a supine, dependent, passive class of people that relies on government and expects government to step in. It's the perfect formula demographically for having big government, big state, and less and less freedom, because there's less and less initiative. And this is what we get in Latin America. I mean, I know it's here in Peru, people are walking down the street with masks on. They're on bicycles with masks on. They go into a store, they need to wear two masks, they put on two masks. They have to wear a visor and a mask in a bus, they do it. They have to show a pass to get, because you've had a vaccine, they'll do it. I mean, they're eating out of the hands of the big state. And guess what? We have the worst COVID mortality in the world in Peru, and they're the most compliant, obedient, submissive people in the world. We had people applauding the beginning of the curfews that started in March of last year. They would start at 8 p.m. and they would be playing music. They'd be applauding. They'd be cheering. You know, it was just this idea of the, hey, we're all in this together, which is a good spirit, solidarity. But they took it to the point where they stopped thinking. They shut off their brains and they just obeyed. And nobody rebelled. Nobody said, hey, we've lost 200,000 people. In the United States, that would have been the equivalent of, since we're 10 times smaller here in Peru than the United States, 2 million people dead. And they can't get enough vaccines. You know?
Well, I will tell you, it's interesting in the conversation that we're having. I was on an interview in New York yesterday, And the topic was, of course, as you're aware, the homicides and violent crime has broken almost every record in 12 major cities. And in fact, it's a lot more than just 12 major cities across the country. We've never had this much violent crime, and even homicides, ever recorded. And so the question was raised, this was in New York, how did we get here and what can we do to turn it around? And of course, with InVest, we talked about the main thrust being that they have a destroying our law enforcement and our first responders. But I carried it a step further. I said, this has not just happened last night. They had to create generations that were willing to allow that to happen. And so they took over our educational system and they removed values and character. And then a person called in real quickly when I said that, and there's that religious fanatical right, you know, that if you don't get your way, you want to try to do something and take it over, shall we say. And I said, I never said anything about religion. I said character and values. We all have character and values. You have character and values. I have. Maybe different. Your character may be to harm somebody if you don't get your way. Mine may be is opposite. But there are always character and values that are being taught. And so when we remove character and values, we didn't remove them. We replaced them in the educational system with that authority doesn't matter. Respect doesn't matter. And quite frankly, I don't think the majority of Americans feel that way. And I think it's time we take it back. So just what you were saying, Bill, we have to, part of this reversal process has to be to go after the education system and go after it very diligently and either gut it and recreate it or find another way.
Sure. No, it's become the enemy. I mean, Patrick Bet-David is this fellow I know I work with. He's a multimillionaire. He's an Iranian immigrant, Iranian Christian immigrant, who spent time in a refugee camp in Germany. Then he went to the United States and he went into, he was a terrible student in high school. He was like a D student. And they said, go to the army. So he goes to the army. They almost kick him out of the army because he was fighting. So finally they said, look, either you straighten out or we're going to kick you out of the army. This was like in basic training. So he decided that he wanted to stay, wanted to turn over a new leaf. And he became an outstanding salesman. Now he makes videos. And one of the things about Patrick that really enrages the publishing houses, because he writes these best-selling books, The Next Five Moves, is that he doesn't believe in college. He doesn't believe in college. And they hate the guy at publishing houses because that is the fundamental value of these publishers, that they believe in the whole Ivy League and in, you know, the whole college and university apparatus and the university professors that publish and all the people that come from these universities and they become proofreaders and they become, you know, assistant publishers and they work their way up the totem pole. And so he's the enemy. But basically, you know, what he says is the truth. You're being ripped off in college. You're not getting what your money's worth. So what do you do? Don't send your kids to college. Send them to community college. You know, you can send them to the armed forces. I mean, I've got two of my kids went in the armed forces, and I would have encouraged all of them to go in. But the problem is Joe Biden. And right. I look at that and I say, you know, well, I get a, you know, learn a trade. Go to community college and learn a trade. Like Stephen, you became a master plumber. You know, you can become a welder. Learn stuff. Start a business. Learn how to operate a truck rig. You know, become part of, you know, a big proponent of the American dream, because you're making the American dream.
Bill, what I think is interesting, what you're saying, is I've seen a lot of people beyond college, masters and PhDs, who are making a little bit more than minimum wage. And I've seen those who just graduated from high school that are heating and air conditioning techs or mechanics or whatever. But when I get their bill, they're making a lot more than minimum wage. I can tell you that.
Well, that's funny. And you know, it's an honest living.
You, right, you know, Steven? My son just started an apprenticeship program a few years ago. He's a fourth year apprentice now. You have to go to school two nights a week for 5 years to be a plumber in this program. And I told my son, I said, once you get out of and you get your plumber's license, I said, then the next step is to start looking at a medical gas license to be able to work on medical gas systems in hospitals. and backflow prevention. And I did the ASS E6010, which was the national medical gas license, allowing me to work on any military base in the world in medical gas. I did emergency eyewash. I did, you know, everything that they have offered me in my career. I took that school and I learned it. And I tell people, I'm a professor in plumbing. You can go on, and I probably spent enough time in school and educating myself in plumbing, and to disrespect a plumber for oh, he's just a plumber, he's a tradesman, you need to look out, because he's been college, maybe not college, but class and stuff and school most of his life. If he's a good and successful plumber, there's things that you can do. When you put it down on my resume, it goes on forever. When I applied at University Hospital and I put down what I wanted per hour, they came back and they offered me a dollar more than I asked for because of my resume. A tradesman is something that, you know, someone that goes out and works with his hands and does things, is the backbone of this country. And no, you don't have to have a college degree as such on a wall to do that. But you do have to go to school. And if you ever think that you can stop learning, that is a false narrative. To stay on top of your game and to stay on top of your career, you need to continuously add things to what you are able to do.
With all the things you've learned, Stephen, you could probably qualify for a master's degree in terms of hours studied or a PhD. I mean, let's face it.
That's true. Right?
How many years? Exactly. How many years, Stephen?
Well, through my, I've got 40 years in plumbing, and I can't think of very many years that I wasn't studying something else related to my career. So, you know, I would say that I tell people I'm a professor of plumbing, you know. I had a nurse at one of the hospitals disrespect me one time. And I personally think I had more years of study than she did. And I would say that I probably make more money than she does. You know?
Wow. Well, it's amazing how you know, the denigration of the blue collar sector of our country. It's amazing. But they're the ones making the money. They're the ones with the become the community millionaires, you know? So
most of the nurses and doctors at University Hospital in San Antonio respected my abilities and respected my career and stuff. But this one, she totally disrespected me. And I told her, I said, you know, next time you have a plumbing emergency, be prepared to wait, because I remember who you are.
You know something? Yeah, you know, this is like the whole issue with law enforcement. You know, which brings us back to a topic that there was this recent news. It's astonishing. People felt uncomfortable, supposedly, at a restaurant, at a diner in San Francisco, and asked some law enforcement officers to leave the premises. Can you imagine?
You know, our new sheriff of here in Wilson County has just made a new policy. And I heard about it because I was working safety response team at our church. And one of the officers pulled up, sheriff's deputy pulled up in our parking lot and was eating his breakfast in our parking lot. And I walked out there to see what was going on. I told him hello. He said, the sheriff has just enacted a new thing. On Sunday morning, if you are on duty and you're not on a call, you need to find a church to spend time at, to stop at in the parking lot and guard the church. And I thought, wow, what a great policy. And I told that officer, I said, you know what? I am really glad that you came here today. And I said, we have breakfast at 9 o'clock. You're welcome to get out of your police cruiser and come in and have breakfast with us. And if you don't feel comfortable doing that, then let us know that you're there. We'll bring you coffee and whatever we're eating for breakfast, whether it's tacos or whether it's blueberry pancakes or whatever. I'll bring you a plate out to you, because we value that idea that you're coming to watch us. Even though we have a safety response team at our church, the visual of a squad car setting in our parking lot means a whole lot, and we appreciate our law enforcement and the men and women that would stand between evil and good and evil, and or evil and innocence. You know, someone that would stand there and put their lives in danger to serve and protect someone that he may not even know, he or she may not even know. I told him, I said, it is an honor to have you guys in our parking lot, to be the watchdog, to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. And
I certainly do appreciate that, Steve, on behalf of all my officers across the country, because you can tell we're in an epic struggle. I've got people like yourself that do that. Then I've got people that ask them to leave a restaurant because they're intimidated by their firearms. Amazing
how ridiculous. They
kept safe and be intimidated at the same time. Doesn't make any
sense. Oh, my gosh. This is.
I am absolutely, every time I see a police officer, I'm not afraid of a police officer. I see everybody wearing the badge as a friend. And as someone that is deserving of the respect, you know, and to be real honest here, not every one of them are, but 99% of them are. And I'm going to first assume they are the ones that deserve respect, that leave their... I tell officers all the time, I speak at police training and stuff. They invite me to speak at police training. And what I say is that when an officer every morning, when he puts on that badge and he puts on that vest, what he's doing and essentially is saying, there's still something left in this world that's worth dying for. And right. I'm willing to put my life on the line to defend what is worth dying for in this world. Because if we get to the point where there's nothing left worth dying for, there's also nothing left worth living for.
I always tell people, you know, and those officers worth dying for, you don't have anything worth living for.
And they're, those officers know that, and that's why they have chosen that life. Correct. And they leave their families in the morning knowing that anything could go wrong, and they may never return. And that's honorable.
Yeah, you know, so we've lost, we haven't completely lost it, but we're losing a culture of valor and a culture that values valor. And this is really important. When law enforcement feels that, and also the military, when we no longer have their backs, when the citizens no longer have their backs, when government no longer has their backs, when leadership institutions no longer have their backs, they're like, hey, well, I mean, I'm on my own here. This is terrible. And I'll bring up my son, who's a Marine, and he said to me, you know, he wants to go into law enforcement. He said, Dad, I want to go into that, and I could maybe work at the FBI, and, you know. And then after all the things he's seen, and after the George Floyd riots, he said, this is it. Forget it. This is BS. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to go into law enforcement. You saw cops being disrespected, cops being trained to do things, and then once they would do what they were told to do, taught to do, they would be derided, ridiculed, attacked, defunded. So, you know, it gets back to we have the devil in the classroom, and that person is a teacher, unfortunately. Not all cases, but in many cases. Or they're cowed into silence. And so, this is a fight at the school board. This is a fight at the church, you know, the pastor. Is the pastor supportive of law enforcement? Are you out of your mind?
Right.
How could you not be supportive of law enforcement?
Bill, I mean, you would have never thought we'd be in that position in this country. Fundamentally correct positions, support law, support order, support authority. But we're in an epic struggle between evil and good right now. And of course, scripture tells us in the end days that people will call good evil and evil good. So we're there. But I tell people that we can't give up hope. We're ordered to stay in the fight, win or lose, yeah, until it's over. So
absolutely. So let me give both of you. Go ahead, Stephen.
Just a really interesting thing. On November 5th, 2017, before the shooter came to First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs,
right?
They actually have him on camera at First Baptist Church in Lavernia. He went there first. Lavernia is about 7 miles down the road. He went in and he sat down on the back row, and service started. And halfway through the first song, he got up and left, and he came to Sutherland Springs. And they can't say for a fact, but they speculate the reason he got up and left First Baptist Church in Lavernia and came to Sutherland Springs, there were two uniformed officers that were waiting after service to go on to duty, and they showed up to church that day in their uniforms with their guns. And they speculate the shooter saw them there and came to First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. That is...
That's powerful.
He respected the badge.
Yeah, that's great.
He knew that if he started something there, there were two men that were better than him that would have stopped it quickly.
Correct.
And he came to First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs where he saw no resistance.
Well, yeah, criminal. I always tell people this, and I'm talking about even the drug cartel. They may be gruesome and grotesque, but deep inside, they're cowards. All criminals are cowards.
Sure, absolutely. Gentlemen, I want to give you... gentlemen, excuse me, Michael. I just want to give you both an opportunity to talk about some important projects. Stephen, Barefoot, thebarefootdefender.com, it's thebarefootdefender.com, is your website. If people are interested in having you speak regarding security issues for their church or their place of business, their store, whatever, they can contact you, can't they? And then, you know, maybe you can work out details of maybe, you know, doing a seminar, right?
We do seminars. I have a retired FBI agent that is part of my seminar, and we come in and we fly a drone around your property. He does drones. He will give you a written, I keep calling it threat assessment. He says it's vulnerability. So basically he walks inside and out with myself, and we talk about how you can increase your security in your facility. And we look at all aspects, you know, your assets and your weaknesses within your building and your property. And he will give you a written assessment on that. We also do pedophiles within faith-based organizations, how to prevent them from having the opportunity to violate your children. And we tell people that the average pedophile violates 140 times before they get caught. So background checks are mandatory. They should be mandatory for all your staff and everybody, but they shouldn't be your only line of defense against pedophiles. We also teach how to barricade doors properly, so in case of a mass shooter event. We also have someone that certifies in CPR, first aid, stop the bleed, and defibrillator. So we train your whole team, CPR, first aid, stop the bleed, and defibrillator training, and get you a Red Cross card for that. And we also, I do, as keynote speaker, I talk about the event in Sutherland Springs and what happened, and teach you to have the mindset to be able to act. And we make what we call, we make barefoot defenders. I am the barefoot defender. We make barefoot defenders out of your team. And why I call myself the barefoot defender, everybody seems to remember on my story that I ran across the street with a gun in my hand and I did not take time to put my shoes on when I heard the shooting. And that's a urgency to action.
Absolutely.
You're your own first responder. And when something goes down, you go as you are. I didn't have time to put shoes on because shoes cost time.
And each second was a bullet because he was firing. Steven, just to tell the audience, you know this, but this individual had approximately 700 rounds of ammunition. And it's regarding high-capacity magazines. I imagine he had them. And Steven, all you had, pardon me, were 8 rounds of ammunition.
All I had
been nice.
8 rounds of ammunition, yes.
And wouldn't it have been great if you had at the ready, you know, a 20 or 30 round magazine.
I do
that to go into.
I do now. The only reason I didn't that day is because I had been burglarized before, and the burglar got the one gun that I didn't have in the safe locked away, and I was afraid that he was going to come back to burglarize me again, and I would be facing my own gun. So I made a habit of unloading and putting away every gun. And so that day I didn't have any that were out of the safe that were loaded and ready to go. So I had to grab a gun, grab a box of ammunition, a magazine, and load them as I was running for the door. I won't make that mistake again.
All right. Well, Stephen, that's great. Michael, I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about InvestUSA. I really encourage people to do local fundraising projects. Tell us how they can do that, Michael. To help you give protective vests to law enforcement people, sheriffs and deputies, and police officers that don't have body armor that need it. How can they get involved locally to help your organization to put defensive vests in the hands of cops and sheriffs?
If they go to our website, that's investusa.org, investusa.org. It's a charity.org. There'll be a litter of things that they can do, all kind of programs. And there is also an email and there are telephone numbers that they contact, and they can let us know if they need assistance in helping to implement those programs. And we're also available, should there be a need, to come speak at any point in time to make sure that together we are turning the tide. First and foremost, supporting our Thin Blue Line and bringing law and order back to America.
So what does a vest cost? And what are some of the ideas that can be implemented locally at a church or in a school or dad's group or a mom's group to be able to raise money?
I tell people this. It's very simple. They can invest with us typically $700 to $1,000, depending. These are active shooter vests. Now, these are not concealable. They're active shooter that will stop any rifle round. And they can take and do anything from bake sales, car washes, and approaching local businesses that support our first responders. You have a church to be the kind of the spearhead or the driving force. Trust me, there are enough people within the congregation, I'm sure, that have even businesses themselves that would contribute $50 or $100. You could easily raise the money necessary to outfit an officer, 2 or 3. And then it's most meaningful to have them come to that organization, to the church, and during a service, present them that vest, but also let them know that you're there to meet their emotional and spiritual needs as well. And you stand behind them through this tough time of making sure we confront evil head on.
Okay, your website again, Stephen. I'm sorry, Michael, what is your website again?
InvestUSA. That's InvestUSA.org. Not .com, but .org. .org. It's a charity, and you'll see a litter of things you can do to help.
Great. Stephen Wilford, what is your website one more time again so people can find out about it, get in touch with you, learn about what you've learned at the border, and also benefit from what you've learned about doing threat assessments at churches and businesses. Where do they have to go, Stephen?
TheBarefootDefender.com. go to the Barefoot Defender. Make sure to put the on it. Somebody grab Barefoot Defender. So go to thebarefootdefender.com.
Great. Okay. Stephen Williford, Michael Letts, gentlemen, thanks so much for being on the Bill McIntosh Show. Godspeed to you until we can do this again.
Thank you. Look forward to doing it again, Stephen. God bless you for what you're doing. Keep up the good work. Together, God will help us to prevail.
I would love to meet you someday.
Looking forward to that opportunity, Stephen. We'll arrange that. Bill, make sure that we get that on the calendar.
All right, yeah. All right, we'll have to put it together. You know, meet midway. Maybe that's Mississippi.
Hey, I'll be back out in Texas. I'm sure.
Alabama,
Stephen, you can join me.
Well, let me know when you're coming back down to Texas. I'll take you around Roma and stuff. I'll introduce you to Sheriff Lauterback. He is he's a great guy.
We're going to probably be doing it a lot sooner than what we realize because they really need help down there.
I know they do.
Well, hey, gentlemen, listen, in closing, hey, Merry Christmas to everybody. If we don't talk again, Godspeed to you and your families, and keep safe and stand tall.
We'll do it. Take care. God bless. Have a good day.
God bless you guys. Bye-bye. Thank you, gentlemen.